Meeting to order. And first order of business is a public hearing and possible work session on 2422. John, you want to give us a little bit of update?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill that would extend the number of days that an individual would have to get to verify that they have a pollution control compliance certificate, and it can be dated prior to the registration or registration renewal of a vehicle. The bill as originally introduced would have applied this change only if a vehicle were owned by a vehicle dealer. However, we will be receiving an amendment today from the sponsors of the bill that would make the change applicable to anyone. And it would move that from 90 to 180 days. Representatives of the 8 state agencies that might be impacted by the bill are here. It's my understanding that they have no objection to either the original bill or to the proposed amendment.
Thank you. Sean Miller and Jose.
You can tell me here pretty soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association in support of House Bill 2422. With me today is Jose, and I'd like to turn it over to Jose to deliver the testimony of why the bill's needed, and then, Mr. Chair, if I may, then come back to the amendment and our discussions with both the DEQ and ODOT on the proposed amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jose Pino Mesa. I'm the first vice president of the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association, of which we are the association for the used car dealers in the state of Oregon. Currently, we have 857 members, which we're here representing. I'm also a car dealer in Portland, Jose Mesa Auto Wholesale. For quite some time, DEQ certificates have basically had a 90-day expiration date. What we're trying to do is extend that to 180 days. The reason being is car dealers today have their cars in inventory for greater than 90 days at times, and trying to be prepared to sell those cars, we like to get those DEQ slips in advance. If we do that, then basically we have that expiration period. So a lot of times we will hold off till the last minute of which the car is sold, and it's probably the most inconvenient time to get that done. So by doing this, it's basically going to give us more time to basically have that certificate and be comfortable in the fact that we're going to sell that car before the 180 days approaches. We've taken a look at this, and there's not going to be any environmental impact, and as far as economic impact, there will be none because you're still going to be getting the DEQ money, and all DEQ, or the vehicles, excuse me, will still have to pass emissions. So that's all that I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? All right, Sean.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in discussions of the bill, and as you could see from the original bill, it was changing 180 days for licensed dealers. And with our discussions with the DEQ, they didn't want to have a tracking system to track all other entities out there and then car dealers differently, and therefore they proposed the just changing the 90-day requirement in line 14 of the bill to 180 days and actually deleting the language all the new language that we had proposed. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, obviously we agree with that amendment, and we did not want to, or it was not our intent to provide a fiscal impact to the department, and therefore we would support the Dash 1 amendment, and that would accomplish our goal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just had a comment. Thank you. I know we had a chance to talk before, and you mentioned that there are other instances where this would come in handy. So if you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beyer, and that's probably a good question for DEQ, and I think because they have outlined some of those other instances to us where they thought it would be helpful other than our problem as dealers, and they had a list of ideas how that would help them as well. And so that might be a better question for the DEQ.
I'll wait. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thanks, Monty and Jose.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Monty King.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Monty King. I'm president of Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association, also representing used car dealers in Oregon. There is a big issue for dealers when they're on the responsibility for DEQ issues. A dealer is responsible for a vehicle passing DEQ immediately if the vehicle is not currently titled or registered, then they're responsible for that vehicle passing DEQ within 30 days. If it can't pass DEQ, you got to buy the car back. That's a pretty big issue when you're selling a car. Even more important, though, might be when a vehicle is missing auto emission equipment. At that point, they're responsible for that vehicle's missing equipment up to 2 years after the date of sale. Because if it didn't have the equipment on it, it should have, because it's illegal to drive a vehicle on the highway in the United States without the current emission equipment on it. I'm not talking about emission equipment doesn't work. Let's say like 6 months later something happens to it and it doesn't work anymore. They're not responsible for that. But if it doesn't have the catalytic converter when they sell it in, say, Madras, and now they move to Portland or Medford, and it's got to be DEQ'd because it's got to be re-registered in 6 or 9 months, then that person can go back and have them pay for that catalytic converter. So this bill won't change that. But what's really important for the dealers in Medford and Portland is that they can go and have the DEQ done. They have proof that that vehicle has the right equipment on it when they sell it. And that will protect them up to a two-year period. My association members don't have any problem with the amendments. I've talked with a lot of dealers over last year about this issue in the last few months, my current membership. I think it's a good bill. I have no problems with the amendments. But there's more issues than just for dealers than just, you know, can I keep it on my lot for 179 days?
Any questions? Thanks, Monty. Anyone else to testify on 2422? Do we have somebody from DEQ or the Mark? Oh, good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Andy Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator with DEQ. And to answer the question how other members of the public might benefit from this bill, there are circumstances where someone may have their car tested, and then as the 90 days are approaching, they may become ill, they may be out of town, they may be on extended military leave. Sometimes if there's a title transfer involved, it may take the MV longer than 90 days to process the paperwork. So there are times where we have to track down and retest a vehicle at extra expense for us or for the customer. So that, in addition to the fact that we wouldn't have to track separately whether a vehicle is owned by a dealer or by someone else, the Dash 1 amendment certainly would be beneficial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else testify on 2422? I close the hearing. 2422 and open work session 2422. I'm ready for a motion on the amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2422.
Representative Beyer moves the Dash 1 amendments to 2422. Any discussion? Any opposition? Amendments adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2422 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves 2422 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Mike, call the roll, please.
Representative Coleman?
Aye.
Representative Brillon?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Excuse.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye. Consent?
Can you do that?
Yeah, it could be done. Do you think the it might raise any flags with anybody?
Not if it's on the consent.
Mr. Chair, I move we place House Bill 2422 on the consent calendar.
Representative Byer moves we place 2422 on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Any opposition? Carries. Takes care of that. Okay. Oregon Metropolitan Planning Organizations. I think there's about four or five of you. Just come on up and introduce yourselves.
We come together.
Okay. He's going to stand up.
I know.
Pull you up and we'll share microphone. There's a chair
over here that will move.
Okay. Good afternoon. Are we ready?
Yeah, we're
ready. All right. I'm Betty Griffiths, and I'm on the Corvallis City Council and current vice chair of CAMPO, and you're going to find out what that is if you don't know. It's Corvallis Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. I want to thank you very much, Chair Gilmore and members of the committee, for having us here for this informational session. And with me, we're going to do a PowerPoint presentation, and we have four presenters, myself, and followed by Michael Quilty, City Council, Chair of Rogue Valley MPO, and then Dan Clem, Vice Chair of Salem-Keizer MPO, and then Rex Burkholder is going to do the grand finale, and he's a Metro Council in Portland area. And so I'm going to take off and let you know that we really appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule to be here. And right away, I like the way you operate. You took care of that business really quick. And we hope that if you don't have information on metropolitan planning organizations, that you learned something today. Or if you do have information, you learned something new. I want you to know that we represent members of MPOs from throughout the state, from north to south and east to Bend. And I'd like for the folks who are here from MPOs to stand up so you can see there's more than just us here. There's a bunch of us here. Okay, thank you. Well, what is an MPO? Well, I didn't know what it was. I thought I lived in a rural area, but the federal government told me I lived in an urban area. And Corvallis area is one of the newest MPOs. They are designated by the governor under federal law to be regional transportation policymakers. And we represent six MPOs throughout the state of Oregon. And we are elected and appointed officials, and we work together. Each MPO works together to try and develop the best plans and strategies for our particular area. And what we're doing now is we're expanding that working together to have all of the Oregon's MPOs work together to support efforts such as the Governor's Connect Oregon Transportation Initiative, and to support maintenance and preservations of roads and multimodal activities. And I could tell that I was in Oregon when I came here down Church Street, because two things happened. One is I shared the road with a couple horseback riders. And the second one was when I was trying to find a parking place, a fancy sports car took it. So we have lots of transportation modalities, and we really do focus on multimodal. One thing that we do, nuts and bolts, is we work to develop a 20-year plan. We work with the Oregon Department of Transportation to do that. and I'm not even looking at the slide, so I'm sort of jumping around. And hopefully you will get this handout at the end. But MPO regions are very significant in the state of Oregon. There's more than 2 million people living within the 6 MPO regions, and they cover 42 cities, including 17 of the state's 20th largest cities. So you can see it's quite a large area that we cover, and we're really working very hard to come to consensus and work together about the best solutions, not just for Corvallis, not just for Bend, but for all of us, and not just for roads, not just for rails, but for all forms of transportation. And we're going to share some more information on those with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Again, I'm Mike Quilty. I'm a city councilman in Central Point, Oregon, and I'm the chair of the Rogue Valley MPO. And MPOs, being large urbanized areas, are the economic engine that drives Oregon forward. With 60% of everyone who lives in Oregon living within a boundary of an MPO, that is where the commerce that drives our state forward into the future takes place. And by investing in infrastructure in these areas, we can continue to ensure that we are the economic engine that drives the United States economy forward into the future with our ties to the Far East. Transportation within and between the MPOs is vital to moving commerce and people throughout the state of Oregon. In the last 15 years, Oregon has seen a huge growth within its urbanized areas, from almost 150% growth in Bend since the early 90s to 12% in Corvallis. Every major urbanized area in Oregon has seen a huge increase in the number of people using the infrastructure that we provide for them. In order to stay competitive in the state of Oregon and with our surrounding states and the world economy, we need to continue to make major investments in our transportation systems. And while we are very, very appreciative of the money that has been spent recently on the OTIA bills and what's coming forward on Connect Oregon, if we do not continue to share a vision for what we can do with the future, in 20 years, we will not be competitive with the world market. With our increasing population and increasing congestion, our ability to provide services and transportation to our population and to the people that move freight and resources around the state continues to fall further and further behind, whether that's time spent waiting in your commute or an extra number of trips that has to be made because a truck can't make its deliveries across town. We continue to see a growing amount of time that we spend transiting from one part to the other, whether it's across our town or across our state, and that time that we spend is unproductive. It doesn't earn income that comes back and gets spent again and again inside of our state. It's time and money that's gone and will never be recovered. We see a funding challenge coming up, and it is incumbent on all of us to work together, whether it's the MPOs, the ACTS, the State of Oregon's Department of Transportation, or the Federal Highway Administration, or the states that are our neighbors to the north and south and east. We need to work together to continue to grow the infrastructure that is here and to make sure that the infrastructure we have is maintained, because if we don't take and maintain our infrastructure, we're going to find out that the cost of maintaining it is going to cost more than it takes to build it. The last one is when it comes to funding transportation in the state of Oregon, when we look at the total amount of taxes that we generate from automobiles and trucks, whether it's registration funds or gas taxes or weight mileage fees, if you look at what our neighboring western states have done, you'll see that we have fallen way behind the average on what people spend to support the infrastructure. And that infrastructure is the veins that the money that drives our state flows through. If we can't move our people to their jobs, we can't move the products that they make and the
stuff that they sell to market, we aren't going to have an economy. So this isn't just about transportation. It is very, very vital to the quality of life of the people that live in the state and the ability of the businesses in this state to continue to operate and produce more jobs. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan Clem.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Clem. I'm a counselor for the City of Salem. We've come before you today to talk about specifically what MPOs are, what they do, but then also to leave you with some thoughts about what we believe our strategy is in assisting this economic development, and also what we believe the Oregon solution should include. And that speaks to Connect Oregon and Senate Bill 71. We believe that the strategy for economic health and to safely move people, freight, pedestrians is to invest in centers, economic centers. And I want to be very clear that while we've just come together in the last year, we don't believe that that's an urban issue only. This is centers and corridors as we move people and freight. It doesn't make much sense to support an urban or rural effort when in fact the connectivity of those, the centers and the corridors, may be in different counties, may be in different jurisdictions. And so we believe that it should take a very macro, a very large-scale look. If you're going to talk about economic development, we can't just fix one piece in one jurisdiction. Lots of times that's cross-jurisdictional. The MPOs are formed because federal money comes into these areas that the federal government defines by population. But in fact, we six MPOs have come together because we honestly believe that there's an opportunity for us to talk about issues common to all of Oregon in centers and corridors. Federal funding by itself can only be spent for certain things. State funding can only be spent for certain things. And when legislation goes forward that tends to earmark or fence those things, it leaves it on us, the local jurisdictions, to try to tie those together. So when we see legislation like Connect Oregon come together and it only defines multimodal in a sense of what was traditionally called alternate forms of moving freight, we have to come before you and say, look, we think it means much more than just rail, aviation, and so forth. To that end, multimodal, we believe, includes road infrastructure. It is not just about the items that you may have seen in Senate Bill 71. The story I'd like to tell you today isn't on the slide. It's a street here in Salem. For those of you that may already be familiar with Salem, I hope you're enjoying your stay here. We're trying real hard to get air service. To get one of the carriers to come into the Salem Airport, and I've got an OECDD grant to do that, and we've been running up to Seattle to talk to Alaska, and we're doing all this. We've got a beautiful conference center. You've got to come by and stay there too. And we've got a lot of both the legislature and the governor have supported Salem with a Salem Regional Economic Center. The story isn't about Salem. The story is about McGilchrist. McGilchrist Street sort of is an old urban road that runs down where a lot of industrial areas, and it connects South Salem and essentially Airport Road with I-5 and Mission Street. Now, you don't have to know exactly where it is, but its function is to move freight and to move people in and out of that airport. Well, it's about 22 feet wide. It has no sidewalks, and it's characterized by the beautiful ditches that run on both sides of it. There is no way in the world that if Connect Oregon or other funding packages spruce up that airport after we do all sorts of things with airlines to come in. There's no way that, if we get the Salem Regional Economic Center going and a lot of the industrial growth which that land's zoned for to provide jobs, we get all those things separately funded and put together. But if I can't find the money locally within the gas tax or within some other method of improving that road, those jobs aren't there. So to look at multimodal definition, while you can say it emphasizes those things that aren't roads, we honestly believe that there's an opportunity that, in fact, roads have got to be considered part of the equation. The solutions that we want to work on as MPOs are long-term solutions. Oregon, in the last number of OTAs, Oregon has truly benefited from the approaches that we've taken. However, when we leapfrog strategies every couple of years, what that means is that some things suffer and some things move forward. Last couple of OTAs have been very generous to the communities. We're very thankful for what's happened. But I will tell you that from the last OTA, from a lot of the bridges that are being improved right now, one of our challenges is, well, what about the streets between the bridges? If we weren't able to cobble together through some very creative planning, same thing would happen with right now is what I'm portending will happen if we don't improve some of the streets between these alternate modes of transportation. That is, the streets between those bridges, particularly on I-5 between Kugler and Highway 22, that sort of improvement would not happen. It doesn't make sense to improve the bridges if you can't at least address the streets between the bridges, and that's the same idea. So we offer that. We as MPOs, both rural and urban centric, have come together and said, look, we've got to talk about all of the infrastructure. You just can't be passing bills and funding that only just spotlights certain things if you don't talk about all of it and provide a method of funding the area, how that whole economic picture happens, then we're not going to get the best bang for Oregon taxpayer dollars. So with that, I'll hand off to Rex Burkhalter of Portland Metro.
Thanks. Chair Gilman and members of the committee, I'm playing, I guess, what do they call that?
Cleanup.
That's what they call it. Okay, we're going to do a quick